This is AgriPulse Open Mic. I'm your host, Jeff Daly. Our guest this week is Viren Popley, President and CEO of Mahindra North America. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by the American Sugar Alliance. American sugar production supports over 151,000 jobs and contributes more than $23 billion in annual economic activity. Learn more at sugaralliance.org. AgriPulse Open Mic continues with Mahindra's Viren Popley next. American sugar beet and sugarcane farmers help keep grocery store shelves stocked with sugar, an American-made, all-natural ingredient. American sugar production supports more than 151,000 jobs and contributes more than $23 billion in annual economic activity. Family farming legacies, American manufacturing jobs, and our national food security need strong farm and trade policies. Learn more at sugaralliance.org. This is AgriPulse Open Mic. An Indian-based tractor company has spent over two decades introducing their tractors to farmers, ranchers, and landowners in the United States. Viren Popley, President and CEO of Mahindra North America, says they've been growing their customer base one machine at a time.
We've been around for over 75 years now, Jeff, and we're the world's largest farm tractor company by volume. So, you know, we make all kinds of tractors. And, of course, you know, the parent company is in India. But we operate across almost 100 countries, and the U.S. being one of the most important markets for us. Also, remember that the tractor market, India is the world's largest tractor market, and the U.S. is the second largest tractor market. So it is, by default for us, a critical market to be present in.
When did Mahindra come to the U.S., and what was the appeal of the customer base here that said this was a place that you wanted to pursue and invest?
We came to the country almost 32 years ago, and it's a really interesting story that we used to actually sell tractors in India, and a gentleman called Rip Evans decided that he wanted to bring in a tractor that he had searched on the internet and read about it and ordered a few tractors from India to be sold here because they looked a lot like the International Harvester tractors with whom we had a joint venture many years back. So when he ordered those tractors in, he loved them. And so he would put them on the back of his trailer and drive around selling these tractors. And so effectively, Rip Evans eventually became our first employee. That's how we started about 32 years ago. So it's been quite a journey, on that. And what's really interesting is that at the time when Rip was driving around the U.S., our current chairman was studying his undergrad in the U.S. as well and used to on vacations go and drive with Rip across Texas and across the southern part of the U.S., introducing tractors to customers. And he really, the U.S. market's been very close to us as a business, and we've grown significantly on that.
You know, I don't know that I've ever heard of a door-to-door tractor salesman. I've heard of toothbrushes and vacuum cleaners door-to-door, but I've never heard of a door-to-door tractor salesman. That's pretty innovative. What are the operations that you are targeting your machines to fit their needs?
So, Jeff, you know, Mahindra's strength lies in making tractors that can be used for many hours. Remember, our core DNA is helping farmers. We started in India working with farmers there. And the level of mechanization in India was quite low. So the tractor that a farmer bought would not only be used to do his work, but do work for a lot of other farmers as well on a rental model and do the work for them. So effectively, if you look at some of the tractors in India, it's very common for a tractors to be used for a couple of thousand hours a year. So we make a lot of tractors which are designed for very heavy usage. So similarly, when we come to the U.S., what we're looking for is, but we make small tractors because farm sizes in India were always about 2 to 3 acres. Now, suddenly you come to the U.S. where 2 to 3 acres is a large country home. And so for us, the model where we try to target and position our tractors are for people who are in rural lifestyle, people who are hobby farmers, and for large farmers as their second tractor. So we're not the guys who want to build a tractor that's 300-400 horsepower used on a very large farm. But if you want a hard-working tractor on your farm that you can use for, you know, odd jobs every day, we are the guys who make that tractor.
Where are the tractors that are sold in the United States either manufactured or assembled?
So almost all our product is manufactured in India, but it is assembled in the U.S. So we do last mile assembly in the U.S. We bring in tractors from India because, you know, it's the most cost-effective model to ensure that we are able to offer the best prices to our customers in the U.S. But we also are, you know, a U.S. company, so we make sure that we do a lot of assembly work in the U.S. So we have two facilities in the U.S. We have one here in Houston, where I am based, and we have one up in Detroit in Pontiac, where we assemble tractors for the northern part of the U.S. So that's what we do.
For some time, U.S. officials have targeted India as a ripe market for better opportunities for trade between the two countries. Do you see there a future where the two countries can work together better in a trading relationship?
Well, let's take a step back, Jeff, at a very basic point. The U.S. is the world's oldest democracy, and India is the world's largest democracy. And by default, you know, we share the same values as countries. I hope and I think that that fundamentally, you know, the basic building blocks are the same. And I do believe that there should be a much stronger relationship between the U.S. and India on an ongoing basis. We have, you know, if you look at whether it is strategic interests, whether it is, you know, operating styles, rule of law, ability to work together. So, you know, they're all there. I just hope that sometime soon, we are able to create an ecosystem where these two economies are really working closely together. And, you know, both sides can benefit from the skill sets of each.
The current administration has wielded the tariff sword pretty boldly, especially in the first year. How have those tariffs impacted your company's ability to bring in components and then assemble here in the U.S.? Has that had an impact to the bottom line?
So tariffs did catch everyone by surprise. But, you know, it was something that the president has been talking for some time, right? Protecting protecting U.S. jobs, protecting the market and stuff like that. So we did look at the tariffs. When the tariffs were high, we did get impacted, of course. But we were very careful. We did not, we had hoped and believed that eventually U.S. and India would work out a working relationship. So we kind of absorbed most of the tariff impact at the time and kept providing products to our customers at, you know, as effectively as we could. But yeah, we did take an impact on the bottom line, but I think we're past that and I'm hoping to grow from here.
I realize that you're over the North American side of the business, but I'm curious, if we look at agriculture around the globe, where are areas of growth and targets where Mahindra either has had a solid stronghold or is still trying to gain market share now?
So for us, of course, the North American market itself is a significant growth opportunity. We also are pretty strong in Brazil. In Turkey, we are getting into operations in Europe and Southeast Asia. So, you know, we're operating in multiple parts of the world. And I see, look, agriculture is changing very fast, you know, with the advent of technology. At the end, we've got more and more people to feed. And so productivity and, you know, cost of productivity are both very important. So we're on a, you know, rapid change of both technology and that also opportunity. So for companies like Mahindra, that's a really sweet spot for us to hit.
So if you're marketing Mahindra as most likely the second tractor on a larger operation or a livestock farm, it would be the primary machine, the only machine for those who have small acreage where farming is probably not their main source of income. What are your customers calling for?
We're seeing two, three different lines of development as we see it. As the availability, you know, the biggest challenge for us in small farms is actually availability of labor. Pretty much the owners stuck to do a lot of things themselves. You know, it's very interesting. I just to know more about U.S. agriculture, I decided to do a course in farming. As a small farm owner, and I'm actually currently doing a course with the Cornell Small Farms Association on how are apples grown in the U.S. You know, it's the largest crop, fruit crop that they grow. And, you know, one of the first things I was told is the biggest cost and biggest challenge for doing anything in farming is availability of labor. So what are customers looking for in small farms? I think, you know, the fact that I need to do it, so I'm looking for something that's easy and comfortable to use. I'm looking for something that's reliable. I'm looking for something that does more work for me with lesser effort. So you're looking at more attachments, more automation, without it being really expensive, because at the end, I'm a small farmer. So, you know, those are the areas that, you know, just gives me really good insight as I meet customers and do this on what are the challenges our customers are facing and how do I do it? And how do I address those with my our products and make sure that they are able to do well with them?
As a utility tractor on a livestock farm, I can't believe there's much demand for automation. But if you are in specialty crop, or if you are in certainly an orchard or tree nut business, autonomy is something that has begun to make its way. Some of that available from the tractor manufacturer, and some with bolt-on products. How does Mahindra approach autonomy?
You know, autonomy, so there's I look at autonomy as a spectrum. With driver, the first step is going to be pure mechanical, and then there's a range of what I call driver assist stuff that happens, and then there's full autonomy. I think we are in the stage where there's going to be a lot of driver assist stuff. Like, give you a simple thing, like, you know, headland turn is a great opportunity. You know, like in cars, we've gotten used to the blind spot indicator, we've gotten used to cruise control. Those are all things that, you know, make it easier for a driver to drive a car. Similarly, on a tractor, there are many things we are doing that make it easier to use a tractor without going to full autonomy. And honestly, you know, I feel that even now, we're all very comfortable sitting in a autonomous product, but we want that big red button which says stop, I'll take over. You know, because we still don't trust the machines 100%. So, you know, we are in that journey, but I think there's plenty of opportunity for small farmers and large farmers to be able to give them products and services that allow them to do driver assist kind of stuff.
How does Mahindra approach its customer base from primarily a landowner operation to a specialty crop operation, or as a utility tractor on a livestock or a crop farm? What do you note about those three different characteristics of producers and the way that they're challenged by the economy today?
Oh, that's we can write a book on that. But I think it, you know, farming as a whole is always been challenging. It's one of the few businesses where you buy in retail and sell in wholesale, and you know, that itself drives its own challenges. The farmer, when he puts his seed in the ground, has no idea what is the journey ahead of him and what is the predictable output that he will get, because of so many conditions, whether it's market pricing, whether it's weather, whether it's, you know, the whole cost of inputs. But, you know, he's a brave man to put in a seed every year, year after year. in terms of what challenges they're facing, I think, you know, if you look at the large crop farmers, the biggest challenge they are facing in my mind is, where's the market? How do I sell this product and make money on it? If you look at the mid segments, which are, you know, one bright spot in the economy, we all know, is beef, you know, that's at the back of quite a few years of very tough times for them. If you look at the mid-sized croppers, you know, the dairy farms and, you know, the, what I call the hay business and, you know, all the other producers of fruits and vegetables, on some scale, you know, the big challenge for them is still getting to the market, getting consumption driven and competing with pricing of the lot of imported crop that comes into the country. And then the small landowners are all struggling with, you know, just the high cost of inputs, the high interest rates and the high cost of all the other inputs, which are taking away from my disposable income for me to be able to continue to do and live the way I want to live. So the whole space is actually going through very strong challenges at this point in time.
I would believe that the homeowner, landowner, that agriculture is not the primary source of their living, might be a more stable customer than you would find in the specialty crop or the crop operation, row crop operation of the country.
Yeah, no, you're right that the people who already have moved into and have bought acreage and are living on the acreage are relatively potentially more stable. But one of the big things that has happened over the last few years, Jeff, is that, you know, people who were being able to sell their homes in cities and move into acreage, which they wanted to do, that cycle has completely stopped or stopped, gone down pretty dramatically because of the lack of rotation of money in the housing market. You know, we went up, we had very, very high prices on housing through the pandemic, and then suddenly the market pricing has just collapsed. So a lot of people who were looking to sell homes or looking to buy acreage have all kind of holding their breath with high interest rates and, you know, what's happening in the housing market. So the growth of that segment has become a bit more challenging.
If we talk to commodity organizations overall, it's surprising that they all say the top issue is labor. So if the country could solve the labor issue, would that be a catalyst, or would that be a headwind for tractor sales to those operations?
It would be a complete catalyst, because it gets, the moment the farmer feels confident about being able to go through the cycle of production, it drives a whole cycle of positivity, and that's really good for us. Not only that, look, for us, if you look at my dealer network is also competing for the same labor. And the government is competing for the same labor. So every time the government announces a large, construction project, for example. Now, I can sell construction equipment if I have it. But my dealership, the local community area, that project will absorb more people. So effectively, my dealers are competing with the government for hiring people. So it becomes very challenging on that side. So labor as a whole, I think, is in rural, the U.S. is a challenge, and needs to be addressed. And if we can address that, for sure, I think it will be a catalyst to the whole rural economy, and all of us will benefit.
There are plenty of calls for a farm bill, and Congress is long overdue of approving a farm bill. Certainty is one thing that producers are lacking, and they say a new farm bill would help to give them guidance and planning for their operations. How do you see the need for new farm policy?
Definitely. We extended the new farm policy. I think it's like extended till September of this year. But look, if I'm putting in my seeds this year, I'm not going to get a harvest, or I'm planning already next year. And especially some of the bigger decisions I take on equipment last several cycles of harvest. So having certainty on the farm bill is critical. As much variability as we can take out from the farmer's mind and give him confidence that that cycle is going to continue, the better it is and the more comfortable and confident the farmer feels. So, having a good, strong farm bill and knowing what's going to happen over the next 3 to 4 years is important for any one of us to, as we take business decisions on what to do next.
Has that uncertainty been a headwind for tractor sales from your perspective?
Not directly to us, because we don't really serve other large farms. But as a trickle down, it does impact us because, the medium and small farms also get impacted by that. So yes, it has been a headwind. And I think it is going to become, if it doesn't get sorted by September, it's going to be a bigger headwind.
So the Association of Equipment Manufacturers points out that tractor sales overall are down. Combine sales are down overall. With the segment of agriculture and landowners that you serve, how are sales?
Well, if you look at the industry and the small tractor business, we've had, 44 months of degrowth nonstop, except I think 2 months in between where we were flat. So the market has come down pretty sharply, and clearly the customer is not in the market at this point in time for all the reasons we discussed, whether it is, higher interest rates, higher costs, uncertainty, all of those are impacting the size of the market.
One of the titles in the Farm Bill is rural development. Those include some of the conveniences that people in metro areas have, and it also includes broadband. Does rural development have an impact on your ability to sell machines to landowners that live in the countryside?
If I ask my son to go and live in a place where he doesn't have internet connectivity at this point, he'd probably look at me like I've done something, something's wrong with me, right? Yes, it's so endemic to our life today. Broadband connectivity and internet is like the new oil. I think it is really critical for that available to happen in rural America. Not only that, a lot of our machines, which are going to be working as we develop precision technology, as we develop autonomy, they will not work if you don't have good broadband connectivity. And not only that, farming itself, with what's happening in AI and what amount of data you're generating with sensors and stuff and what analysis you can do or information you can get, that online today is so much more than what it was 5 years back. So I think it's absolutely essential that rural America get good broadband connectivity. And it's a fact that even now we have large patches that don't have cellular network, let alone, broadband data.
Well, Viren, we want to thank you very much for taking time to be with us on this edition of Open Mic. It's an exciting story of Mahindra and how you have grown, how you serve the globe's farmers, and how you are certainly interested in helping farmers here in the U.S. Thanks for being with us on Open Mic. Viren, it is Open Mic, and that means today you've got the last word.
Thank you, Jeff, and thank you for having me here. Today's environment is with the uncertainty. I think it's less about, just direct subsidies and more about whether the producers have the certainty and tax treatment and access to capital to continue to invest in reliable, versatile equipment. And, really shaping, because it's shaping the industry, shaping the rural lifestyle, so to speak, the lifestyle of, middle America, which is so unique and so wonderful. And how do we continue to sustain that and make that, continue to thrive is a challenge. And I'm hoping that, all of us can come together to ensure that that continues to happen. And I can just assure everyone that Mahindra is going to be at the front of this and trying to figure out how do we serve all our farmers and customers better.
Our thanks to Viren Popli, President and CEO of Mahindra North America, our guest this week on Open Mic. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by the American Sugar Alliance. The American sugar production supports over 151,000 jobs and contributes more than $23 billion in annual economic activity. Learn more at sugaralliance.org. For AgriPulse, I'm Jeff Nelling.